Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Today, I am joined by my regular co-host, Dominic Bisogno, and once again, Kevin Vivas, for maybe his third or fourth appearance on the FV English podcast. Always a pleasure to have a local here with us. Kevin, let's start. Although this is going to be a opening stage review, cannot ignore the emphatic victory that your team Caracas recorded yesterday over the reigning champions of Liga FV, Deportivo La Guaira. What was it like for you to be back in the stand supporting your team as a fan after 606 days of games behind closed doors?
Well, first of all, hi everyone. It's a pleasure to be here and speaking about football. And not necessarily supporting because I was on the journalist song, but well, I enjoyed. Though there were just 100 people, which is a few amount, but we are used to be like that. But also before they were just 200, 300 people and not fans. So the environment is very different than before. So yes, I enjoyed it. And it was a very, very good victory from Caracas. They display an excellent game. Well, let's see if they repeat the game.
And out of interest, it may have just been a mistake on your behalf, but if it's not, it's an interesting point. Did you mean to say only 100 people? Or did you mean 1,000? Because the official numbers say just over 1,000.
I said 100. No, 1,000. Yes, 1,000.
Similarly, I did find that interesting that they said 1,000 because I was sat in the south stand or stood in the south stand with the batter and you were in the tribuna. So I could see your stand and you could see my stand. Mm-hmm. Do you think the numbers were accurate? Do you reckon there were about 1,200 people there?
I think that they were 800. How many do you think?
I'm not sure, but even 1,000, like, it looked optimistic. I think maybe 1,000 tickets were sold or were given out kind of thing, but maybe not all 1,000.
No, I don't think so. Because the Central Grada, as I tweeted, they were like 150. In the Barra, they were like 300, something like that.
That's
because, something like that. And the Tribuna, like other 400, something like that, 500.
Okay. And secondly, welcome, Dominic. Dominic, opening stage madness on the final day would be a nice place to start, particularly when you were pivotal in covering that. I don't want to lead you in your answer, but surely Grupo Central is where we have to start.
Yeah, absolutely. It was probably the most, it definitely was the most chaotic of the three in every position. I think that was unique too. There were certain groups where maybe the third and fourth places were maybe up for grabs, or maybe there was a fight for first or a fight for relegation. But this group, almost every single spot, what was up for grabs the whole season up until obviously relegation was settled a couple of games before the end. But La Guaira, you know, ended up staying top, but they barely held on to it, especially after we saw their form in the start of the net stage and Lara's form in the start of the net stage. It's easy to think that a couple more weeks of this and it might have not been 1-2 for those two teams. And then Puerto Cabello and Aragua also had really tough fights for their positions. Aragua quite literally right at the end grabbing their spot, while Carabobo completely missed out after looking like they might even finish top two for a while. So yeah, just a completely chaotic group.
Absolutely. And I think Aragua at the end of the day were probably the only team to surprise people with qualifying. Like maybe there were, you know, for example, Gran Valencia missed out at the end, but at the start of the season, would anyone have been considering Gran Valencia to qualify in the first place? If you look at Aragua's season, Kike Garcia left pretty early on, and he's been a favourite of mine and Kevin's for a number of years now, really good coach. And to be fair, the way they turned their season around and then to sneak in at the very last was really positive. And then to see them get a draw against Portuguesa, who haven't been a bad team at all this season, suggests that maybe they won't simply be in the hexagonal B to make up numbers and perhaps they can, you know, cause some upsets. We want to focus on reviewing the opening stage before we dive into a preview of the closing stage as it was. So I think a good place to start is a quick rundown of how those groups finished. So as we've alluded to, Grupo Central, the central group, was chaotic until the death. So we'll start there. Deportivo La Guaira finished first and Deportivo La finished second, qualifying them for the hexagonal A, or the championship round, as I'm seeing it be referred to. Puerto Cabello finished third and Aragua fourth. So they go into the final phase B, which is a six-team group in which the top two will qualify for Copa Sudamericana. Gran Valencia and Carabobo finish fifth and sixth respectively, and therefore their season is over. And Yaracuyanos were relegated in seventh. And before we move on to the other groups, just want to get your thoughts and explain to the listeners the real tragedy in Yaracuyanos' relegation. Perhaps, Kevin, you could talk to us about that, because the them being relegated 4 weeks ago didn't look likely at all, but then things out of their control have put them in this situation.
Well, yes, even Yaracuyanos, they were in second place in 1 week. But they were like alongside Gran Valencia, the team with less quality in their squad. So maybe it's very reasonable that they were in the last place. Many lost in a row. The psychology affect them so much. So yes, I think it was very deserved. And yes.
And maybe 4 weeks ago, they would have been perhaps still on course to finish bottom, but would have benefited from playing a playoff against the team from second division. And with the gulf in quality between the top division and the second division, they probably would have felt comfortable and confident of winning that. But then the rules changed with only a few games left of the season to say that all bottom teams were going to be relegated. And, you know, that was very short notice for Yaracuyanos, and perhaps they would have felt confident of staying up until that.
Although, when it was announced, it was Academia Puerto Cabello, the last place.
Who now finished third and were level on points with Deportivo Lara, who finished second. So that it just shows how tight that group is.
Yes.
Moving on to Grupo Oriental, or the Eastern group, Caracas FC finished top. Monagas finished second, and therefore those two go through to the championship round. Metropolitanos and Atletico Venezuela finished third and fourth. UCV and Mineros finished fifth and sixth, and therefore their seasons are over. And Lala finished seventh and have been relegated. The obvious talking point in that group is Atletico Venezuela's decision to not participate in hexagonal B. Kevin, what happened there? And do you think that the league have made the right choice in continuing with just five teams instead of perhaps replacing Atletico with UCV?
Well, the fact and what has happened many times in football world is when a team is not available to qualify what they did playing, usually your spot is given to the next place. In this example would be to UCV. It happened in 2017 or 2016 that the eighth place of that qualifies to La Liguilla, those were quarterfinals and two semifinals. Well, the eighth place couldn't qualify for a certain thing that happened. So the ninth place could play the quarterfinals. So that could be logical for UCB to qualify. And also UCB has an outstanding last round. They were very good. I wouldn't consider that it was going to be on the server because they didn't have sportive merits. They played very good and they did not qualify because their start with their former DT was very awful.
Yeah, but they finished, as you said, really well under Sasso. Sasso being your former head coach when you were a young player. And I saw your tweet a week or two ago with your team photo, you as the goalkeeper, Sasso as the head coach. And I know you said it meant a lot to you to see him do so well with Useve. Do you think that next season, with Sasso at the helm, we can expect progress?
I would define Sasso as a warming coach. He motivates, he encourages their players, and they teach them to attack. Once he arrived, Useve started attacking everywhere, all the players going up, and the team changed, and the results were seen.
And can you, before we just move on to the Western group, can you just explain to listeners exactly why Atletico Venezuela won't be participating in the Hexagonal B, having qualified?
Well, Liga Futbol stated that all the teams that would qualify to the final phase, they would have all the requisites like approved. And one of them is all the wages paid. And I think, well, Atletico Venezuela had certain debts after August. And also maybe other players before. And that made them not qualify or not participating in this final phase.
And obviously, you're not responsible for this in any way. But there were numerous teams that had alleged debts. Do you think all the other teams that qualified that have debts have cleared those debts?
Repeat the last part.
There were allegedly multiple teams that had debts this season to their players, but Atletico, the only team that we've seen drop out as a result. Do you think that means all the other teams with debts cancelled their debts, cleared their debts?
It's very hard to know, but yes, I know what you mean. There is a team in the Hexagonal A which is known allegedly that they have debts. I don't know what happened there.
And lastly, the Western group, Occidental. Dominic, Táchira finished first, which I think, despite it being a three-horse race for maybe 75 or 80%, ultimately were likely to be the team to win that group. Estudiantes finishing second and qualifying for the A, which meant Portuguesa missed out by 3 points and qualified for B alongside Hermanos Colmenares. That was the surprising team in that group. Zamora and Zulia, fifth and sixth, and therefore their season is over. And Trujillanos, sadly, not only relegated, but perhaps not going to be in existence, certainly as they are at the moment next season. They failed to win a single game all season. They drew one and lost 23. You saw a lot of that group, Dominic. You know it very well. What can we expect from the teams that have qualified? Obviously, we're one game in to the final phase, but we can gloss over that. Let's pretend it didn't happen. What can we expect from those four teams?
This group had a lot of teams that played very attacking football, had a lot of talent up front, arguably less so in the back. But, Hermanos Colmenares are an example of that. Extremely talented up front. They also concede a crap load of goals. It's the reason they struggled to qualify, really. But across the board, all four teams, great attacking talent. Táchira, easily the most of the four. We've talked many, many times about Gondola and Chacon and other players they have. Gomez, who are all very good. You should certainly expect when you watch these teams, although the way the first week went didn't necessarily play out this way, but you should expect all these teams to be very entertaining when they have possession. They certainly were entertaining during the group stage when they had the ball.
Yeah, and to pick up on what you said about Hermanos Colmenares, in the absence of Carabobo, them not going through, Hermanos are going to be like my favorite team to watch, I imagine. Obviously, Hexagonal A is going to be far more exciting, purely because it has more meaning. It's what's going to decide who wins the league this season. It's also going to decide Libertadores spaces. But I think we saw from the first game of the final phase, Academia Puerto Cabello against Hermanos Colmenares. Everything you can expect from Hermanos Colmenares, you got in those 90 minutes. Plenty of attacking football, ultimately scored two goals by numbers, really. If you have 20 shots, you're going to score two goals. Like, if anything, they were wasteful. But, you know, fighting until the very end, getting a 92nd minute equaliser, you know, having gone 1-0 up and then conceded two goals. And like you say, they concede a hatful of goals. They've conceded more goals than any other team in the final phase, be it in hexagonal A or B. They're going to be my favourite team to watch. For what they don't have defensively, they make up for in entertainment. I think we should move on to our standout players from the first phase. Of course, in the past week or so at FIFA English, we've announced our teams of the stage for all three groups, as well as our combined 11 as voted for by our followers and also our own choice. And interestingly, there was only two differences between the fans' 11 and our 11. So to start off with, I'll recap the fans 11, and then we can go through our individual favorites who aren't necessarily from that team. I know Kevin had one or two players that he felt were really standout players but didn't make our collective cut. So in goal, we went for Luis Romero of Portuguesa, a goalkeeper that has been called up to the national team on multiple occasions this season. In defense, John Aramburu of Deportivo La Guaira we had at right back, although he has played most of his minutes at left back this season. Kaki Rivero and Adrian Martinez at center back, and Oscar Gonzalez at left back. Edson Castillo and Bernardo Manzano at attacking central midfield. Sorry, Richard Celis in attack in midfield, with Chacon and Gondola on the wings, and Samson Akinyula up front. The only differences between the fans' 11 and our 11 is we had Juan Camilo Perez at left back and Chiqui Meza in midfield. The head coach for us and for the fans was Noel Chita San Vicente of Caracas Football Club. Kevin, as I alluded to, you had one or two players that you think had very impressive opening stages that we didn't include in our teams of the season. Who were those players and why do you think they deserved the recognition?
Well, my first of all, without doubt, it's Juan Carlos Ortiz. He was key. He was key in Monaga's season. Without him, Monaga's wouldn't achieve their second place. Thanks Juan Carlos Ortiz, they won many important matches, mainly against Metropolitanos. I don't remember the other I picked up, maybe Juan David Muriel and Maurice Cova. Maurice Cova, he didn't play several minutes, but he was very outstanding all the minutes he played. I think Edson Castillo is being very good as well, but it's more a part of a team, not as necessary as it was Maurice Cova for Deportivo Táchira. And well, Juan David Muriel, all the games I watched of Estudiantes de Mérida, he was very good. Not the statistics, he doesn't have good statistics, but there are certain things that the statistics do not see, like the how he is located on the pitch, for example.
Absolutely. When you go with consensus over statistics, it's interesting to see where the variations come up, because obviously we pulled our opinions to come up with the original shortlist and then narrowed it down a bit using the numbers from Instat. But the variations, I think, you can explain between the fans 11 and the 11 that we chose by, like what you said, things on the pitch. For example, Juan Camilo Perez, we slotted him in over Oscar Gonzalez. And I think that's, you know, that's testament to how enjoyable Juan Camilo is to watch. And the other one that we picked, that Dominic was a big cheerleader for, was Chiqui Meza at Academia Puerto Cabello. Dominic, I don't disagree with you at all on Chiqui, and I think I sort of know what you're going to say, but, you know, at the end of the day, why did you believe he deserved a call up to our opening team of our team of the opening stage?
You know, he just so consistently proved to be so important in so many ways to Puerto Cabello. They started the season several games. I don't off the top of my head, five, six, seven games. They couldn't score goals. When they did score, it was like one goal and they'd still drop points. They just were consistently not producing enough in the attack. And towards the end of the year, and we talked earlier about how they basically leaped out of the relegation zone, he sort of miraculously showed up as a source of goals, a source of assists, a source of important tackles. in the defensive third. He was just everywhere, and you know, was almost playing multiple roles. We have him here essentially in sort of a central midfield slash defensive midfield kind of role, but he really played five or six positions per game in a way. And yeah, he just, that team clearly needed some leadership and some motivation. They started the season very poorly, and he showed up as a veteran of the league, of course, and really brought it. And he's as important to them being in third and now in Hex B as any other player in that entire roster.
Yeah, and I think
and following the line that says Dominic, it made me remember what players I picked up as well, which is Daniel Linares. I say that after the performance that the player can have, we also got to consider the influence of the player. And Daniel Linares was key for Estudiantes de Mérida with many assists. I know that he changed his position from left back to left midfielder, but his performance as left back was key because Estudiantes de Mérida was close to not qualifying the second place. And many of their assists were important to get that place.
Yeah, he finished the opening stage as the leading assister, I believe, with nine assists. But what I was going to say, Kevin, where picking up on Dominic's points about Chiqui Meza, is to you and well, to all three of us, it was no surprise that their turn of results coincided with Martin Carrillo being appointed as head coach. I know you're a fan of his, and you said in recent weeks how many credit him with Zamora's success a couple of seasons ago. For people that haven't watched too much of Academia Protocolo, or perhaps people that don't watch Venezuelan football but happen to listen to the podcast, what can you tell us about Martin Carrillo as a coach?
Well, Martin Carrillo is a coach that do like to attack and to be vertical. I wasn't really watching him so much in the 2019 season because he was with Trujillanos and few matches were broadcasted. But Trujillanos had a very good season with no players. In 2018, Zamora was known for yes, being a very vertical team, although his first DT was Ali Cañas. I have a friend very close to Martin Carrillos, and he told me that Martin Carrillos was the one that manage all the session trainings, and Martin Carrillo was used to be on the line to order their team during the match, and well, with Puerto Cabello, the Ching make a 180 change of his attitude.
Yeah, and it was Academia Puerto Cabello's third head coach of the season, I believe. But has ultimately got them into Hexagonal B and came very close to Hexagonal A, and surely are favourites for one of those top two places, and therefore Copa Sudamericana for the second season running. But picking up on Carrillo, his appointment as Academia Puerto Cabello head coach was also as a result of a sadness in Venezuelan football, and that ultimately being that the decision of CONMEBOL to cancel the Sudamericano under-20 competition. He was the head coach of Venezuela's under-20s at the time, and it was a really promising generation that are now not going to have any competitive football whatsoever, with the youth football in South America not set to resume until perhaps as late as 2023, CONMEBOL said in their initial statement. But it is a good opportunity for us to talk about the under-20 players that shone in the opening stage of the season. For those of you that don't know, every team in the league were obliged to play with at least one under-20 player in their starting 11. A number of teams had many more than that. Trujillanos, for example, had many youth players playing, as did Mineros. Carabobo and Caracas also had very young squads. Caracas's average age of 23.1 was the lowest in the division alongside Trujillanos. And Metropolitanos also play with a fair amount of young players. Dominic, if you were to pick one standout young player per group, who would you pick? Feel free to start with whichever group you like.
I'll go with the first obvious for Occidental is Yerson Chacon. For reasons that we've explained many a times in various formats and others have. But, you know, to put it most simply, when you watch him, he doesn't feel like a youth player. You know, he's on our 11 and the fan 11 ahead of a lot of other players that were very good this season, and he's significantly younger than some of them. But when you watch him, it doesn't feel like, oh, well, he's good for a kid. He just looks like a great forward in this league. And he's matured so much, even I think from last season, even.
Definitely. He looked like a kid last year.
Yeah. So just immensely impressive. Can only imagine what he's going to be like when he's like not young anymore, when he's, you know, in maybe his mid to late 20s. For La Guaira, or for Grupo Central, from Deportivo La Guaira, I'll mention another person that was in our 11, which was Aramburu, part of a very sturdy defense, and, you know, contribute to the attack as well, but was very much part of a unit that they had in the back for most of the season, albeit with some change during international breaks. That was very sturdy, very consistent, and I would say led that group to the top of the table as much as any other forwards, which didn't always execute as actively as they probably would have liked. For Oriental, that's a tough one for me.
It was the hardest group. I think it was a group with the most rotation of the young players, but not the same level, perhaps. Our team of the group went with Abraham Bahici of Metropolitanos as our young player. Is he the player that you reckon stood out most from the under-20s?
I think that's it's a very fair appointment. I think especially, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, Caracas had several young players, but for him playing with Metropolitanos, I think maybe that stands out a little more simply because it's a team that's a little less filled out with talent. So, you know, each player is having to step up a little more. Certainly young players, they're stepping up a little more than you would naturally expect them to. So yes, he was very impressive. Certainly important to that team, surviving some of the pressure that Atletico and Useve put on them throughout the season, and Mineros as well. So yeah, he was very impressive.
Yeah, and Caracas FC, despite their young average age, they have quite a number of players that are just the wrong side of the sub-20 rule, for example, although they're not Venezuelan. Acanula and Bonsu are 21. Eduardo Ferreira is only a year out from the sub-20 rule. Caracas FC are one of the teams that rotated their sub-20 players a lot. The goalkeeper, Wilber Hernandez, got quite a few minutes as the under-20 player. René Rivas at left back, was another player that had quite a few minutes. But one that got increasing prominence in the second half of the opening stage was Manuel Subaran, who then started against Deportivo La Guaira yesterday and had an impressive game. Kevin, as a Caracas fan, are you excited about Subaran's increasing minutes in Caracas FC? And do you think maybe he's going to be the under-20 player for Caracas in the second half of the season?
Yes, for sure. Manuel Subaran, the match he had against La Guaira was a very, very good news for Caracas FC, because maybe if you do not have in Caracas Richard Celis or Bonsu or Akinjola, you didn't have any substitute. And Manuel Subaran was proved that he can make their labor. He played alongside them, but I think he can make it well as a winger. He's very talented, good dribbling, and it's not so fast. He's agile, so it was a very good news for sure. Maybe if Wilber Hernandez do it better than Pedro Velasquez, but Manuel Subaran, even if he's not the only juvenile, he can be a starter on Caracas FC.
Absolutely. And picking up on Wilber Hernandez, it's interesting that Caracas, Noel San Vicente ultimately is the head coach, has chosen to utilize all three goalkeepers considerably this season. Flores, Velasquez and Wilber Hernandez have all had decent spells in the first team. And, you know, normally a team would not rotate between three keepers as often as San Vicente has. But despite that, Caracas finished top of their group in the end quite comfortably, with the fewest goals conceded in their group. And in terms of goals conceded across all three groups, only a handful of teams conceded fewer. So it was good man management in general, but also taking into consideration the youth rule, useful for San Vicente to be able to call upon Wilber Hernandez numerous times throughout the season. But to make one last point on the young players of the opening stage, Kevin, I knew you had a lot of enthusiasm for Mineros at the start of the season, and particularly the volume of young players and the talent that they had that you saw. In general, and with hindsight, how did Mineros's opening stage play out? Obviously, they finished sixth and missed out on a place in the next round. But for them to qualify for the next round, I think would have been close to a miracle, considering how few star players they had, the financial difficulties of the club, and the amount of young players they had to count on.
Yeah, I think that Mineros had the chance to qualify, but all the restrictions, the constraints they had with the salaries, they were not paid, and the team started to fall down, and they started to do not feel motivated, encouraged, like impaired with the project, and they just fall down because they have very good young players and good old players like Argenis Gomez, Francisco Carabalí, Taka Machado, Anthony Matos, and very good young players like Emerson Ruiz, Pedro Zaragoza, Brian Alcocer. They were a good squad, but it's a show that an indicative that the financial constraint can piss off a team.
Absolutely. I think for the final 5 minutes of the podcast, we should glance an eye forward to the final stage. And as I alluded to earlier, let's pretend that the first game didn't happen this weekend, because I think it's fair to say there were one or two shock results, not necessarily who won and who lost, but by the margin that some teams won and lost. So we'll start with you, Dominic. What are your predictions for Hexagonal A for the championship round? Just to recap, that is going to be Deportivo Táchira, Estudiantes de Mérida, Deportivo La Guaira, the 2020 champions, Deportivo Lara, Caracas FC, and Monagas competing for not only the title, but four places in the Copa Libertadores, a 16 group, four places in Libertadores, two for Sudamericana. How do you see it going?
If forgetting what we just saw this weekend, I think already my thoughts would have been top two would be Caracas and not, this isn't necessarily an order within the two, but Caracas and Táchira. I would have thought third and fourth will probably be Lara and La Guaira, and then Mérida and Monagas for the bottom two. That's what I felt going into it. Some of the results are leaning me towards that, maybe less, some of them less so. But I definitely think that Caracas and Táchira feel like the two that are going to be in the final. They feel like they have the most elite squads in comparison to the rest.
And we already know the final will be held in Caracas. So advantage Caracas if that happens. Kevin, do you agree with those pairings that Dominic said? Caracas and Táchira the top two, La Guaira and Lara the middle two, and Monagas and Estudiantes the bottom two?
Almost, but yes, Caracas and Táchira, they are in other level. It's amazing. This hexagonal, it's very exciting. I think one of the best final phases on the last decade. All the teams are very good. All the teams have their history. Maybe but Deportivo La Guaira, but they were the last champions. And this is the very first season in many years in which Caracas and Deportivo Táchira are the bigger teams. Like, it had not happened in many years. Well, maybe the Clausura 2019, but it was all the season that Caracas and Táchira has been the best teams. And honestly, this is the first time, this is the best time I have seen Caracas FC playing. They are very compenetrated. Deportivo Táchira is as well very compenetrated, but not as much as Caracas Football Club. But I see it's very hard to predict who will be the champion between them. If they are, of course. Third place, I am between Deportivo La Guaira and Monagas. La Guaira and Monagas is a very good team. The bottom, two Estudiantes de Mérida and Lara.
Okay. For what it's worth, I'm going to side with Dominic on this one. Monagas have been, I've liked Monagas in attack. I think Franklin Gonzalez is going to be exciting for the next couple of years. I know he's not young, like 23, 24, I think, but I've liked him alongside Lete Ortiz, who's obviously got all the plaudits deservedly for his goals and assists. But I'm going to side with Dominic on the finishing positions. And I'll open up how I think hexagonal B will go. I'm going to go with Academia Puerto Cabello winning the hexagonal B, or certainly top two, but I'll stick my neck out and say winning hexagonal B. I think Portuguesa will finish second. And then I think third and fourth will be Metropolitanos and Amanos Colmenares. And I think Aragua will finish bottom of the pile. But ultimately, the only thing that matters in that group is who finishes first and second, because that is what will get Copa Sudamericana qualification. So Puerto Cabello and Portuguesa for me. Dominic, who do you think will get the top two positions?
I agree with your pairing. I before the first round of games, I would have said Portuguesa to finish top, but I was a little disappointed in their performance against Aragua. So I do think they won't dominate this group the way I thought they would, but I think those will be the top two.
I just, before we give Kevin's say on the top two, I would like to say I'd absolutely love Amanos Colmenares to finish in top two, but I think it's a strong group. And I just think, you know, their centre-back pairing against Puerto Cabello, although they got the 2-2, their centre-back pairing had the average age of 38 and a half, a 37-year-old and a 40-year-old. It's outstanding. Kevin, your top two for hexagonal B.
I think that the psychologists in this kind of groups and phases are very important, and Hermanos Colmenares is a non-experienced team. Although their players are, they are like old, they do not have much experience in final phases, as happened with Carabobo in the part of the first round. So I would predict first place two between Metropolitanos and Academia Puerto Cabello. What happened with Portuguesa? I think they are a strong team defensively, but attacking, they depend so much. They are very reliant of Adrián Fernández. And so the teams started to know how do they attack and how Adrián Fernández was so important for them. And in the first part of the season, Portuguesa were very dangerous, mainly because of Adrián Fernández, very good player. And afterwards, this team started to realize or notice how do they attack, and they are started to stop, and it resulted in a very bad last part of the season for them. And I think that will happen again in the hexagonal B.
So you're going Academia Puerto Cabello and Metropolitanos for the Copa Sudamericana positions.
Exactly, hoping as well that Hermanos Colmenares could make it.
Yeah. Dominic and I have been big fans of Hermanos Colmenares all season, and I know you like them too, but you said to me throughout the season that clubs and fans of clubs and watchers of football around the country aren't going to know anything about them or even know their players, because the behaviour of a lot of Liga football fans is to watch only their own team, or at best only their own group. So obviously that's two-thirds of the league that perhaps don't know what Hermanos Colmenares are and what they're about. Why do you think, you know, both me and Dominic, as well as yourself, like to watch them? What is so likeable about them as a football team?
It's a very offensive team, and they have attractive players, appealing players like Juan Camilo Zapata, good technique, good passing, and also a very good man. And Anuar Peláez is like a Salomon Rondon in other levels. And Wilmar González also is very vertical. It's an arrow. And yes, these are the players that we like. And they are a team in an isolated city in Venezuela, which is Barinas. And Barinas already have a team. It's very hard to pick up fans, to pick up press. Not like Metropolitanos or La Guaira, that maybe they have the Caracas press, but they are very, very isolated. And if Hermanos Colmenares won't qualify to the Copa Sudamericana, he's a big candidate to be another Lala, I think.
Yeah, as in like to fall away next season. not have the same success. Yeah, no, I can see that, and it would be a real shame. But it does feel like it's a sort of like a one season wonder kind of thing, but very much enjoying it. Dominic, I said just prior to the podcast that we were going to touch upon Liga Footvee 2. You've been dedicated to it for us all season. How is the end of the season shaping up? And like last season, where we could point towards Emmanuel Colmenares doing wonderful things this season, is there a candidate that you could put your finger on that we can look out for next season?
Yeah, so the right now the semifinals are what are being played now. So four teams are still in playing each other in pairs and to eventually make a spot in the final. I don't think that there's a team that is quite as explosive as Hermanos were or are. I do think that there are teams that are, you know, certainly bringing unique things to the table, or if not unique, noticeable. So I'll just quickly run the two pairings that are left are Ureña versus Titanes FC Maracaibo. That's one group, or that's one semifinal. And then the other semifinal is Atletico La Cruz versus Libertador. The first legs of those two have happened. So Titanes won 1-0 over Ureña, and La Cruz and Libertador drew 1-1. So they still have to play another match, both of those. I think right now that Titanes and La Cruz are going to be in the final. La Cruz, what stands out to them is they have a lot of youth. I believe they shared earlier this week that 12 players made their debut for them this season, their professional debut, which is, you know, that's impressive anyways, but it's certainly impressive then when you also do very well. So I do think that they have a unique momentum going into, if they make the final, going into that final. Whereas Titanes have a far older squad overall. I don't know who wins out of that matchup, partly because they've just literally not played each other at all. I don't quite know how those matchups end up looking. But I think they'd both be exciting to see what they can manage if they got promoted. But yeah, my prediction for the final, who's going to make the final, is La Cruz and Titanes.
Nice. And I guess the sad point for us, having followed them dedicating time to them last season, is Ureña might miss out sort of at the final hurdle for a second season on the trot. But on the flip side, perhaps the opportunity for another new team to make their Liga Footvee debut next season. We were following, or predominantly you were following, Academia Rey quite closely. Obviously, they've not made the semi-final. Did they just fall away towards the end? What was the story there?
So their groups, or their regular season form, did drop a little bit towards the end. They still finished second in their group. And they were knocked out in the quarterfinals by Titanes. That's actually part of the reason I think Titanes have a lot of potential, is they held them to a 0-0 draw, and then they won 1-0 in the second leg. Just a very clean, professional, mature performance in the two games from them against Academia Rey. I think that team has a lot of talent in it. I do think that the length of the year eventually did get to them a little bit. The production slowed down, which obviously is, you know, something that you can't have happen, especially when you get to the knockout stages. So, I was a little surprised by the shift they took, but in turn, that's led me to have to see a lot of potential in Titanes's future run through the rest of the tournament.
Okay, so it looks like a new face for Liga Footvee 2022, if Dominic's predictions are to be believed. And Dominic has had a number of decent predictions, and that's possibly a nice point to finish this podcast on. Atletico Venezuela may have dropped out, but we will not forget the season that Joel Infante has had, and a season that Dominic Pisogno very much predicted. So the final 30 seconds of this episode, I'm going to dedicate to Dominic Pisogno on Joel Infante. Dominic, 30 seconds to eulogize about Infante. Go.
Yeah, you know, before the season started, we were doing like introduction to the teams and whatever, and what to be excited about. And it occurred to me, you know, he'd been at Atletico before, he'd had a pretty good form there, and had obviously gone to several clubs after that. And I thought, hey, maybe he was pretty good for Gran Valencia the year before. Didn't really have a lot of help in that team. This team has a little more talent up front, and I just thought maybe there'd be something there. And he's been fantastic. You know, he only really didn't make like our team of the year because there's just so many other good forwards, but he had a fantastic year and he scored a lot of fantastic goals. For Gran Valencia, a lot of those goals were like penalties and stuff, but this year he was scoring lots of great open play goals. And just really
very impressive and skillful. Yes, very good.
So yeah, I mean, good for him. It's a shame that he won't be in Hex B to continue that. But he had quite a year, and I admit, while I have no like investment in the team itself, I admit I was pleased to see him. My offhand prediction end up being true.
Yeah, 11 goals and 5 assists in the opening phase, only bettered by Akinyula, Richard Celis, and Lete Ortiz. So it really was a remarkable opening stage. So that was our review of the opening stage and our short preview of the final phase. We'll revisit our predictions in December to see who was right or who was closest. Until next time, thank you very much and goodbye.